only have one slide, and the idea is to just try to pull together a little bit of what was just described as sort of the movement in transforming public health. How does this all kind of come together in just sort of a very simple logic model, if you will? So let me just go through this real quick. We're not going anywhere in public health, as Earl correctly identified, if we don't wrestle with our the leaders in public health and their decisions about our workforce. If we don't have properly trained leaders, we're not going to absorb the really cool stuff Jim described. We're just not going to get there, and we're going to be left behind. And we have to have a workforce. We hire out of the community. We hire out of schools of public health. We've got to have an adequately prepared workforce to handle this kind of new thinking about public health. And there's a lot of things coming out, as Jim described. We're going to have agency standards. We're going to have system standards. We've got laws and policies on the books. This whole idea of community engagement that we all talk about for all our programs at state, federal level, by the way, starting to now get onto the idea of community engagement as a strong public health tool as well, and portfolio management. So all of these things, the workforce is working through these new ideas, if you will, to then get to what we want, which is improved performance. And I agree with Jim, and I know Earl has said it too. Performance is the key. And by that, we all want the ultimate outcome, improved health. So this is kind of why it's so important. If we don't have, you know, look at the budget of a state health department. Look at the budget of a local health department. It's what, 80%, I'll bet, FTEs. We are a people-based business. And we are all about having the right leadership, having the right workforce, working through these systems, of course, and the science of public health, but then somehow getting that improved performance and then getting an improved health outcome. So I just want to kind of remind everybody why this is important and why it's really going to transform state public health, local public health, and federal public health as well. And it's all because of safer, healthier people. So with that kind of a pulling together, just real briefly, and I think, by the way, as I look in this audience, I'm talking to the choir, but I think we can get into some really detailed stuff here on the questions and answers, and I'm just going to sit down and let you pepper my colleagues with what you think of some of the key. But I do want to get back to that telecommuting question, so somebody please ask that. Thank you. All right, go ahead. Who's first? Yes.
Earl, I'm interested in how you made the case for reimbursement or tuition loan repayment for public health workers at the state level. We have, looked like we're being self-serving in some respects. We all know that we can provide that to a legislator, kind of argument needs to be made, or is with the parent and some other kind of system, and we just made benefits enough.
We
can do that. I can make that time that they're having to do, but it allows them to do that. If they want to do, you know, work some extra hours on the day they don't have to attend class, it gives them that flexibility. That gets back to, again, I use the term flexibility all the time. That's where I think the public sector hasn't done enough of. It's looking at flexibility.
I'll add to that, too, that CDC has a program. I mean, you have to get approval and so forth, but
sure.
You attend class, they'll pay for your advanced degree, but you attend class on our time. Your library time's on your own.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, that's what I was
But you have to have a commitment. We do a contract with those employees.
Same thing.
Well, there's a commitment that they have to give back. When we do that, allow them to spend 2 years getting an advanced degree, and they have to come back and give us a certain amount of time beyond that, or they have to pay that back. If it's doing tuition assistance or whatever, they're obligated then. So that's kind of a hook, if you will. It's not the end all do all, but it certainly helps.
Mary, you were next.
Yeah, actually, he took my question. I was very accepted by that. I'm with GOP School of Public Health, and we've done a lot of the same types of programs in our state that your School of Public Health has done. One case scenario that we've had is developing a communicable disease course for nurses, and it's a hybrid, mostly online course, a 14-week course, and then they do on-site. And I'll ask you to comment on the balance between online and residential. But what we found is we asked them, you know, we thought they would get release time from work to go through the material. It's pretty expensive. And it's directly related to your job. You didn't have to stream your job. But what we found is they ended up doing a lot of extra work on nights and weekends just to get through the material in that 14-week period. So I'll be curious to see how well these folks can balance, you know, their work requirements and also getting their school work done. Is it mostly full-time students, or do they go part-time, and is it residential or online?
Well, we're fortunate, especially for our central office, and the university's
right there,
down the road.
Exactly.
So it's really easy for them to go there, but mostly part-time. Very few are able to go full-time. We do have a few internship slots that we allow people that are working on their master's in public health, for instance, to do some work with us in some very specific needs area. We don't open up to the full scope of public health, but there are some areas in particular we need help. For instance, if you slotted it earlier, half of our TV folks, for instance, were on material or retiring. And we use that to help backfill. But even if it was on a part-time basis, it gave us a little bit of transition there.
Yes.
I'll be very candid. There's a couple of things that we did with this. We were very, very fortunate. We were able to translate a lot of the data that we utilized to convince state personnel to a legislative initiative. Our number one priority for our agency 2 years ago, legislature, was critical public health staffing. And we were able to get an additional $5 million in recurring money for critical public health staffing. Now, this little game, I think a lot of y'all probably know this little game you play. Our legislative session runs from January through June. Our state fiscal year runs from July 1st to June 30th. Our budget was approved in June. Obviously, your payroll, we run about two payrolls ahead. There was an try to do is, obviously it's a volunteer type program. You can't force somebody to be mentored if they don't choose to be, but we try to make sure that we strongly encourage our shining stars, the folks that are really, you know, 3-5 year employees. If you can, my feeling is if you can catch those folks early enough and incite that interest in staying in public health and not looking outside to go other places, and give them lots of opportunities. For instance, when we identify those folks, we try to set them up with a senior manager person. And they may job shadow a day a week. Or we try to make sure we align them with specific types of opportunities in that shadowing program, that mentoring program. And then we have routine meetings that are set up under that mentoring relationship where there's a system of checks and balances over what the outcomes of the mentoring program we hope to achieve and whether those things are being accomplished. Making sure that we expose those individuals to the gamut of what public health is all about. Too many times folks come in and they're almost like the CDC funding. They're stovepipe. They work in TV, the TV is their life, and that's all they know. They don't understand HIV, they don't understand maternal child health, they don't understand environmental public health. And we try to give them exposure to all those different areas. So that mentoring may not only be with one person, it may actually be with a series of people. So they understand as they move up the management ladder that those opportunities expand, and the breadth of knowledge has to expand. Fill those gaps and understand all those different programs. But the beauty of that is you get people that come up in those stovepipe type systems. Once they get exposed to that, then they're for our organization, have been the trigger, the key, I think as Jim mentioned a while ago, in understanding those relationships, how some decisions that are made over here have a tremendous impact in another area, and how you can develop those linkages, and really you understand how you can gain a lot more efficiency and effectiveness out of your organization by examining the programs and the protocols you have here and where there's an opportunity for some overlap and some sharing, if you will. And that helped our organization, I think, grow. And I think that's the way you get our organization to grow, is understanding that. Too many times we've got people that I work on a grant. We've got some of our employees, for instance, that work on some of the federal grants, and some of them are 100% federal funded. They think they're federal employees. They'll tell you that. Hey, I work for a 100% federally funded program, and we see that in some of the CMS programs, particularly under the surveyors. And for instance, we see that in probably our WIC program, for instance, 100% federally funded. They think, well, I just work for WIC. You know, if I've got a nutritionist and a nurse that works in WIC, then I want to utilize those skills other places and make sure we link those moms and children that are coming in. Some other services may not be provided by us, but certainly our community partners can provide. And so it gives us a real ability to capture that audience and get them into the services that pay dividends to what Jim was talking about, those ultimate public health outcomes, those health outcomes that we're all trying to strive to.
One thing you said earlier, kind of, I'm going to relate to an article I read in the New York Times. I don't know, there's Generation Y, then there's the millennial group, and whatever their name is, but a younger workforce. It's much more interested in understanding how their piece in the machinery relates to the entire piece. And they talked about that being so important. Also, they look at this to see other opportunity, because they want to move around every 4 or 5 years or do something different. And if they see the breadth of public health, we won't lose them to industry as rapidly, I suppose, from what your model suggests. As they might say, you know, I'm kind of done with TB. Maybe take that same skill set, I'm going over here to some other infectious disease or move over to some other part of public health, because we are very broad and wide. So seeing the big picture, I think, is an advantage to these incoming workers that we're trying to attract. I'm just relating what you were saying to some of the national trends.
I didn't touch on telecommuting, but let me go ahead and address that subject too. We started out, we kind of crawled before we started walking with the telecommuting. Really, the key to telecommuting is you got to marry up the right person with telecommuting. Not all people have the skill sets to telecommute or have the wherewithal with telecommuting. So you have to make sure that you've got someone who's got a good performance record with your agency. The type of job they do. that one thing we have done with our survey staff, for instance, is everyone has an assigned date. They come into the office and view their data upload to CMS. And so you may be assigned to Monday, the next person Tuesday, the next person Wednesday. So you share that one space. And it's enabled us to really cut down on the amount. You have to recognize that people like to have their space, like to have their pictures and everything else. So you have to keep that. For some folks, it doesn't work, but having that space in his mind. But again, you have to look at the employees and try to match them up with those types of opportunities. We don't force anybody to telecommute. It's certainly a voluntary type thing. But we see real benefits in it, from a lot of different things. Again, from global warming, from all, I mean, you name it, there's tremendous.
performance standards, which were also management and budget approved in 2002, have been operationalized in about 23, 24 states and hundreds of local health departments. It's a voluntary assessment, very complicated. Version 2 is a lot leaner and meaner, thank goodness. The first version was fairly bulky, up 600 and some questions and so forth. But I mean, that just shows you, I think, the power of the self-incentive. In other words, just the recognition that public health needs to be accountable, needs to be performing, needs to be moving and advancing forward, and data is the way to kind of drive that. If you don't self-assess, you don't really know where you're going. So I think there, and the state systems that are out there, North Carolina, the one in Michigan, Missouri, and so forth, I think this really indicates that we're in a new era. And so we have to have incentives. I agree that we have to have good, smart incentives. They shouldn't be penalized if you're not accrediting. There's that little balance there. But I think we're in an environment where an awful lot of states are going to jump into this thing over the next several years. And this, I don't know your name. All right, who's next? You had a hand up.
I have the incentive question.
Oh, yeah, okay, good. Others then, we're back open to an open floor. Because then I get to ask one of my questions. Oh, okay. Elliot?
Start.
Regulated than we regulate. We get regulated by personnel requirements that are unreal. I mean, you got
come back over to you guys over here.
Standard.
put folks into the leadership development pipeline, if you will. And we're trying to groom leaders, emerging leaders coming in. That's a state or regional leadership institute, and they've been selected, they're the health manager, whatever. And then you see them as the rising star. Are they getting exposure to these things that are transforming public health? And can they have an action plan or some product that they're doing during this time they're in leadership development that actually has some meaning, not just to their learning of this stuff, but could they be a workforce? Is this where you're going, Carl? Could they, in fact, be sort of a workforce to come up with good ideas to help Jim and Earl and others in leadership positions in public health get this next business cycle done, this next 4, 5, 6, 7 years that's really going to transform public health?
Yeah, we could give you a list of 10 discrete things that would be year-long projects that somebody with a little bit of thought could delve into for the benefit of many.
There you go.
So I think
that link would be wonderful. I know you need the workforce, in a sense.
Yeah.
And you've got bright, capable, smart people. For those of you not in the audience don't know, Carl Umbel's the chief science person at the for the whole Public Health Leadership Institute in North Carolina. And evaluates everything, presented some outstanding data yesterday about the importance of leadership in this new world we're in. And would that satisfy some needs for some of the scholars?
Yeah, I think that if people just use what you think, Jim, about using these innovations, that's what the state is just going to tax.
Yeah. Oh, that'd be
a no-brainer.
Yeah. And somehow coordinate that. Food for thought. That's why you come to APHA. You hear these things and you make connections, you network, and things occur.
Exactly.
But we are kind of at... Do we have one last quick question? But I don't want to leave somebody here who's just at that burning question, and it's the little nugget we needed anyway. No? We're fine? Well, I want to thank everybody for attending. I know it was the first session in the morning, and you had to get up early. Find the long line at Starbucks and then get in here. And I particularly want to, the presentations were outstanding, so let's give a round of applause to